What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hot teams.
That ass is so hot right now.
Hot quarterbacks.
Jeez, look at the butt on that.
And hot takes.
Yeah, he must work out.
This is Danny and Dusty on Conference Championship Week.
Brought to you by Smartline Home Design, a trusted local architectural design studio ready to bring your dream home to life. Visit smartlinehomedesign.com.
Danny and Dusty on 1080.
Oh,
the Fan.
Hour number three here on a Tuesday afternoon when you're listening on 1080 AM. Watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for hanging out with us. And we've got two more NFL games still to go through. Rams, Eagles, Bills, Ravens. Which one do you want to dive into?
Rams.
Rams, Eagles?
Rams, Eagles. Yeah. Yeah.
It was nasty, it was ugly, and it was beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, that snow football was awesome. It 100% affected the game. And there's, Kay Adams tweeted, do we really like snow football or
yes.
do we like the idea of snow? No, I love snow football.
I will tell you, though, I've been in environments where the snow that they had there, the not soft snow, when you're wearing a helmet, it's a very eerie sound. That tick, 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 tick sound on your helmet the entire time.
Sure.
It's very weird. And but I don't know why that's such a, like, you know when you just remember certain things?
Yeah.
That's one of those things that turns out to me. And I remember just watching the snow on that field and not being fluffy. It was the heavy, wet stuff.
They said it was hail, like hail, ice pellets at the beginning. I don't really care what it was like. I like watching snow football for the same reason I enjoy watching the U.S. Open of golf. I like watching some of the world's best athletes
slog.
Look absolutely normal. Right?
Except for Saquon Barkley.
I am totally okay with that. But also, that was in a game that is physical and it's supposed to be built on speed and brutality. Guess who was the best damn player on the field?
Saquon.
The guy who is the fastest and most physical. And that was Saquon Barkley. And look, I don't... Kurt Warner does this all the time where he says, you know, playoff football should be played in a dome. Get out of here with that.
No.
No.
Complete opposite.
Home field advantage is we are good enough to where we earned this, to where we can dictate the terms. Yeah, we're used to it.
Of course the Arena Football League guy wants to play in the dome.
Well, and the guy who played in Arizona and in a dome.
On the fastest show on turf.
In St. Louis. But it is something that a home field advantage, the better team, you earn that right to be at home. And it played a massive factor. The Kyren Williams fumble. Look, holding onto a football in the cold and in snow is a lot different than just carrying the ball. And he had fumbling problems
before
to begin with. But you get a punch on the ball. We saw it in the Baltimore and Buffalo game, too. Like, a peanut punch has exponentially more power in the snow.
Yeah, we saw it in Ohio State, Notre Dame. Igbuka. It was a full-on punch.
Yeah, that
top.
Was not, but that
not,
wasn't
not, not in the
conditions.
Yeah.
But when you're in the elements and the ball is cold and it's wet and you have multiple layers on, your grip is a little bit different.
And you that carry peanut it like punch a loaf of bread.
Means a ton. And so, yeah, it played a factor, but that game ultimately came down to why I couldn't buy the Rams, which was I could not get out of my head 255 yards the first time that they met. And Saquon Barkley went for 205 yards rushing in this game. And they dominated the line of scrimmage. Philly won that game in the trenches. They won it on the line of scrimmage. I thought Matthew Stafford played about as good of a game as you can play in those elements where you're not used to it. There was a stretch where you couldn't throw the football because it was snowing too hard.
Yeah, you couldn't see it.
That eliminated a lot of what LA was trying to do. Well, they still found a way to make it a one-score game at the end, and they put up a hell of a fight, man. That was a really good football game. And now Philly, they have gone up the boards in Vegas to, they're the Super Bowl favorite now. And a lot of it is to do with Saquon Barkley and being able to lean on him at the end of the year. This guy may go down as the best non-quarterback free agent signing in NFL history.
It also makes you point and laugh at the Giants and also shudder in fear as you could have seen this guy on a team that mattered for multiple years besides that.
Yeah.
That man was wasting away in New York.
Giants fans can be upset. He wouldn't be this good if he was on your team.
No. Just I mean, no, that's, being honest. That's what I'm saying. He wasted away in New York.
Yeah. And if you look at it, like if you take Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Drew Brees out of it, guys that were quarterbacks who left in free agency, you're talking about Saquon and his impact with this Eagles team is equivalent to Reggie White in Green Bay and Deion Sanders in San Francisco and Dallas.
I was
Charles
Randy
Woodson
Patriots
going to the
Packers.
Like the impact is incredible. But Randy goes to the Patriots and they went from being a Super Bowl champion to being just best offense
ever.
Like, and they didn't even win a Super Bowl, right? But like, the Eagles might not win a Super Bowl this year. They still have.
Tell you what, I don't trust their quarterback.
The Commanders, the Bills, and the Chiefs to go through in order to get there. But you're looking at the impact of Saquon just being there. It's an all-timer.
Mm-hmm. I will say, though, on the other side of the ball, though, that Jalen Carter guy, really good.
Unbelievable.
Really good. Turns out when you can get his snap rate up to, like, more than 50% of snaps, he's an impact guy.
What was crazy is, like, people were, like, Philly fans were like, got him at 9. Howie Roseman is amazing, a genius. It's like, well, we all knew why he dropped to 9. I mean, there is a pretty significant
thing that happened.
Incident that happened in the celebration of their national championship game. Like,
and the fact that he couldn't stay on the field.
Like that made his stock drop significantly. And they said, we're going to take him. And he is the most dominant defensive lineman, interior defensive lineman right now in the NFL. Like, he is unbelievable how many plays he's impacted.
What he did. I was so glad he didn't kill Matthew Stafford when he had the chance.
Golly.
When he just grabbed him and lifted him up like a rag doll.
He was like, he just kinda, little baby, you're not moving.
He just let him know, like, I could kill you right now.
Mm-hmm.
What's funny was the offensive lineman coming over with both our hands up like, no.
Yeah, he's like, I got it. I could.
please don't kill him.
But not gonna.
I will say the Rams did acquit themselves, though. And, you know, the turnovers were what bit them. Puka Nacua is... It's a different wide receiver, man. There's not many wide receivers that you see get better in elements like that.
BYU, man. He's been playing in that Provo stuff.
But, I mean, he didn't shy away from the physicality. In fact, he sought it out.
He is a really fun receiver. He is the type of guy that Emeka Egbuka could be in the NFL.
Yeah.
Where he's a nasty blocker on the perimeter. He's sure-handed, and he is a good route runner that finds soft spots. Like, that's going to be the thing. Is like, if the Rams go and they get Emeka Egbuka, it would be like Sean McVay is collecting all of the Infinity Stones of possession receivers that are also explosive and that block their ass off. Like,
just trying to find a way to get Amon-Ra St. Brown.
What are we getting? Yeah. Like, what?
Mine.
Yeah, good guys to have. Good guys to have.
Did you come out of this game feeling any differently about the Eagles? Because I know the elements played a factor in this, but also Matthew Stafford showed that you could throw in these elements, and I just don't trust Jalen Hurts to win me a game where he has to throw the ball.
I worry about the injuries coming up, and like, Hurts was slow, but like, the most important thing in these snow games are take care of the ball. So instead of forcing throws, he took 7 sacks. And look, LA's defensive line was heating him up.
Shout out Jared Verse, who just got Rookie of the Year.
He also was holding onto the ball for too long. Mm-hmm. And I think the elements played a role in that.
Sure.
He hasn't been sharp in the last 2 games, though, coming off the concussion and being out for a couple of weeks. He has not looked sharp, but I will say it will be interesting to see kind of where he is this week, because he's going to have to be better and he's going to have to make throws. But I'm a little concerned. I'm concerned too, because Philly got dinged up.
Yeah.
They got dinged up in that game, and you can't take too many hits at this point of the year, or especially on the defensive side of the football.
It becomes detrimental.
Yeah.
Very quickly. All right, come on. Let's talk about the game of the weekend. It was the big-time matchup, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens against Josh Allen and the Bills, and it delivered in every aspect. We'll dive into that next here on Danny and Dusty, 10 of the Fan. In the matchup of MVP hopefuls, Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens and Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills, you got everything you wanted in this game.
Yeah. We had weather. Cold weather game. Buffalo. It was turnovers dictate these games, and I think that's kind of the common thread when you look at Detroit and Washington, when you look at the fumble of Kyron Williams in the Philly-LA game. Hell, even the Chiefs and Texans game where it wasn't a turnover but a blocked field goal, right? And you're looking at those instances.
It's the margin of error.
So small. So small. To where that dictated the outcome of these games. And look, for Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens, unfortunately for Lamar, as impressive as he is and the body of work, I mean, dude will likely win the MVP this year or be number two after winning the MVPs. Mm-hmm. His shortcomings in the playoffs continue to bite him. And after the game, like, he's not ducking away from it. It's not something that he doesn't know. But what can you do?
And like I've been saying all season, every time we're in situations like this, turnovers play a factor. Penalties play a factor. Today, well, tonight, it's a turnover. You can't have that shit, you know? And that's why we lost the game. Because as you can see, we're moving the ball wonderfully. It's hold on to the fucking ball. I'm sorry for my language. This shit annoying. I'm tired of this shit, man.
And turnovers were their downfall, right? They lose the turnover battle 3-0. He fumbles the ball. Mark Andrews fumbles the ball. He throws an interception. And that was the outcome of this game. Also, Mark Andrews dropping a 2-point conversion was a massive issue. And we would have been looking at potentially overtime in this game, breaking the Ravens' way. But Lamar's right, though. Turnovers were a huge, huge factor. And in the games, he's 3-5 in the playoffs now in his career. In his three wins, he has 4 touchdowns, 1 interception, and 0 fumbles lost. Mm-hmm. In his 5 losses, he has 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and 4 fumbles lost. And it is clear line that you can draw to where the Ravens go awry in these playoff games. A lot of it is really good defenses force you to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. But when they continually happen again and again, you have to look at the quarterback who is responsible for 10 of those turnovers in those 5 losses. That's 2 a game.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at his total turnovers. He's got 14 turnovers in 8 games. That's a lot, man. Mm-hmm. And for all of the Lamar is great, and he is. His playoff numbers as a passer, he's barely completing 60% of his passes. He's turned the ball over regularly, whether it be through interceptions or through fumbles, and his yards per game aren't that productive. Like are playing better teams, and that's a real thing. But when you're not scoring, you're not efficient, and you're turning the ball over more often than not. That's tough, man.
But I think in the last couple of years, and like this game included, he throws for 250 on 18 of 25. I mean, he's putting up. He's efficient enough. His numbers are good enough. It's
the last 2 years.
Coughing up the ball, and but, that like he's evolved so much as a player.
100%.
But that is like his last hurdle he needs to clear because it really is detrimental to the team. And look, he's not alone in this. It is 100% a team game, right? And Derrick Henry, as dude was another animal run where he's just mowing over dudes. Mm-hmm. But Buffalo did a really good job. Buffalo's defense played a hell of a football game. And they.
I was surprised Henry didn't see the ball more.
Than 18. He had what, 18 16. Catches? 16? 16?
Including one drop. Derrick Henry, probably the greatest running back of this generation. Mm. I don't think it's probably. It is. He is. My man has hands of stone out of the backfield.
Not a great receiver.
That ball not hit him square in the hands, in the chest.
Well, it was low. The one he came back for on the sideline.
Yeah.
It was low, but you should catch
that's
that.
That's a. You should 100%. There's nobody around. There's no.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have hands.
Just bloop right it just, off.
And I was like, because that, I mean, he makes that catch. There's nobody around him. And if that man is allowed to plant and get upfield,
yep,
you have to make business decisions at that point in time.
I think the bigger issue is Mark Andrews. Like that.
I get that he dropped the 2-point conversion, but everybody wants to hang this on Andrews. You can't throw the pick and you can't fumble the ball.
Oh, he fumbled. He fumbled too.
Oh, I know.
Like his stretch was 8:50 to go in a 5-point game. He fumbles, mm-hmm. and he is a guy that
never.
This is the thing. Football plays happen. You don't catch every ball. Sometimes you do fumble. And as rare as it is with him to fumble the football, it happens. It's the fact that he no-showed the media after, and he no-showed the media today when it was clean out your locker day.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Penn State lost, I said, I will give Drew Aller all the credit in the world. That young man went up onto a podium after the worst game, mm-hmm. and the worst loss that you can imagine, and he ate it and he owned it. Dude, Mark Andrews gets paid a lot of money, and I bet he is pissed off. But I sit there, and it's not like, hey, you need to talk to the media. It's the right thing to do. It's what all professionals do.
Yeah.
And we had a college kid who threw one of the most boneheaded interceptions that you'll see in a semifinal game that cost his team a chance to play for the national title. And he was able to suck it up, mm-hmm. go up and take that.
And he's not making near the money you are.
No.
Now, you're making good money.
Mm-mm.
But any of that money.
No. But give Buffalo enough credit, too, because I thought Josh Allen showed a lot of growth in awareness in him. Because, look, he didn't light up the stat sheet, but he did everything that you want your quarterback to do to end up going and winning a playoff game of that magnitude, right?
Took care of the ball.
He didn't play hero ball. He didn't try to force the ball into windows that it had no business being in. He did try to, in Chiefs honk, you'll get this one. He did try to flop on mm-hmm. on a pretty egregious flop, trying to get a flag, but he took care of the football. He ran inside the goal line. He was their battering ram. He had 2 touchdown runs. He did exactly what they needed him to do to win a game. And he has not always had the ability to do that. And he's got to do it on the road in Arrowhead. Back-to-back weeks now, he's got to do this where you got to make sure that bad Josh Allen doesn't rear his head, because we've seen it happen. And if he can take care of the ball in Kansas City with the way their defense played against Baltimore, they're going to give themselves a chance to win that game. They are going to give themselves a chance to win the game, because Lamar Jackson got sacked twice. They did a good job of heating him up
mm-hmm.
and caging him, making sure he didn't get loose, because Lamar's rushes, most of his rushing yards was by design.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the
play breakdown, scramble play.
No, be incredible. And you got it, again, just as much as you're asking Josh Allen to do it in back-to-back mm-hmm. weeks, you're asking the defense to do that, because Mahomes is brilliant yeah. at keeping plays alive. In playoff time, he tucks the ball and he runs, and he gets big chunk yards. I thought it was a good game for Buffalo. And you also, you get it out of the way now, like, hey, we are from Buffalo, but we can play in the cold weather games too. Now you're going to go to Kansas City. We all know it's going to be cold in Kansas City mm-hmm. for the AFC title game.
Bills
Nobody
are used
want
to it
any other way. But you say, hey, we can play yeah. against a high level team.
This isn't the Miami Dolphins going to that way. This is a team that plays in just as cold or colder.
I love it.
No, it's setting
so
itself
what
up.
Be like?
I would imagine brutally cold.
Let me look.
I mean, it's snowing in Baton Rouge right now, so I imagine Kansas City's not doing too well.
Yeah.
You know,
a buddy that he lives in Arkansas, and it was 2 degrees this morning.
Which might as well be 40 below.
Sunday, high of 32, low of 23, cloud cover. Let's see.
The cloud cover is useful. Keeps it from getting too cold.
We have 5% precipitation between
just gonna be cold.
2 and 5. Other than that, no precipitation.
Yeah, it's just going to be cold. Cold and socked in.
Come on, give me snow.
There you go. No, just maybe that'd be great.
I want snow.
I'd love it.
Every other day after that, though, is sunny, so
craptacular.
Yeah.
All right. All right, coming up next, we didn't get much time to get to it, so let's talk about the Detroit Lions and where they go from here after the best season in their franchise's history in recent memory. They got a lot of places to go, but first, here's the Big Kahuna Sports Center update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
The Detroit Lions season comes to a whimper after being seemingly the team of destiny, but overcome by the team of real destiny in the Washington Commanders. Already you're seeing a change in the front office or in the coaching staff as Ben Johnson has left his OC position to take over as a head coach of the Chicago Bears. And very likely Aaron Glenn will do the same with the New York Jets or another team.
Both those guys. Yes. They did an incredible job on a really good roster on both sides of the football. Aaron Glenn, especially with all the defensive injuries, to kind of get those guys ready week in and week out and still like give your team a chance to win. They gave up 45 points to the Washington Commanders. But it's also a pick six was mixed in there and turnovers leading to a short field. Momentum kind of grabbers that Washington had. The defense finally broke for Detroit. But, dude, those two coordinators were special.
Where do they go from here? Because their roster is pretty much locked up.
Mm-hmm.
They're not worried about Penei Sewell going anywhere. Amon Ross, St. Brown, Jared Goff. Aiden Hutchinson will return healthy, and their defensive core is mostly intact, except for their secondary. But their front seven is taken care of because it's mostly young guys or guys on their first real deal. So where do the Lions go from here?
I don't know, but this is where young up-and-coming teams, they can hit a roadblock, right? You can withstand attrition on the coaching front if you're head coach is dominant on one side of the ball, right? Defensively or offensively. But Dan Campbell is the leader of men, right? And this is kind of double-edged sword here in that he's got to nail these hires, which is the scary proposition. But it's going to be attractive for any football guy that's out there because he will give you the leeway to be successful in whatever you see fit of being successful with the pieces that you're given. He's going to let you do your own damn thing. And he's going to give you a long runway because he's not going to meddle in what you do. He's going to let you be the play caller that you were brought there to be. And he'll take the heat, good or bad, that comes your way. He was taken, like he took that loss hard.
Oh, you can tell. He took all the blame.
But he's doing it for his coordinators and for his players. So it's going to be attractive because he's solid in his footing with the organization. You've got a young core on both sides of the football to be successful in the short term and the long term in Detroit.
No matter which side of the ball you were coordinated for, offense or defense, it's attractive.
It is attractive, 100%.
You've got dudes to work with.
But Dan Campbell needs to find the right guys to do it. Right. And I believe that he will, but also like sometimes it's just a special mixture.
It's a secret sauce, you know, and you try to replicate it and it might be difficult to do.
It might be really difficult to do. And Aaron Glenn, like Dan Campbell stood behind Aaron Glenn because Aaron Glenn was taking shots the first 2 years there. Mm-hmm. Like it was like, he doesn't know what he's doing. Like, the defense is underperforming.
Yeah, it's because the defense wasn't good. The secondary's beat to hell.
Playing that over their skis. Yeah. Like, the only thing that you can say was truly bad, fourth down was awful against Washington. Mm-hmm. One of them, Arnold, on that fourth down run, where his naked bootleg out by Jane Daniels, and he just bites inside. You're like, where are you going?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Just set the edge, and you get the ball.
But that's not Aaron Glenn's fault.
No, it's not. I highly doubt he taught his guy to just disappear and not set up and set the edge there. Probably not what he was coaching. But,
You talk about Aaron Glenn and the adaption that he had. He lost his literal entire secondary.
All of it.
His first five DBs out with injury.
Not good.
And instead of folding, he goes, you know what we're going to do? We're going to dial up the pressure to a level that we've never done it, and we are going to blitz more than we ever have because we don't have the time back there. He completely overhauled his whole philosophy to adapt to his personnel and adapt his scheme to his personnel on a dime.
What's interesting, though, is that you're hearing the rumblings coming out of Detroit now are that, like, your offensive line coach is interviewing for offensive coordinator jobs. Like, it may not just be Ben Johnson or Aaron Glenn. Like, they may take a guy or two from that staff as well. And it's like the sum of all of its parts are kind of what made Detroit special. That's what I hope doesn't happen. I hope Detroit ends up getting over the hump. Like, I hope that they can keep on just churning this machine moving forward. But look, with the play caller gone on the offensive side, with potentially your offensive line coach leaving too, if he's not promoted the OC in Detroit, and if you also look at the fact you got Jared Goff. Mm-hmm. You don't have the elite quarterback.
No.
That can be the stabilizing.
You got a lot of stuff around him.
I think you have more questions offensively than defensively in Detroit. Mm. But I hope that they can keep moving along because they were so fun to watch. And it was a special year for Detroit. I just hope that this isn't the end of it. They need to get back to the NFC Championship game. I hope we see him in a Super Bowl. I was wishing that we and hoping.
I want a Bills Lions so bad.
Yeah,
I want a Bills. Now I am Bills Commanders. I am so in on Bills Commanders.
Yeah, you want Bills Commanders?
Oh, God, yes. Give it to me. Yeah. Give it to me for two franchises that have just been up against it.
One, I kind of want that too, just because Dan Snyder can be like, "Oh, I was the
barrel.
Problem."
Yeah, a double barrel to Dan Snyder.
Yeah,
that's
do you. Like, honest question.
Mm.
Do you think he's following?
Oh, 100%.
He is.
Oh, the spite and anger that he has to be that when all those people pointed at it and said he was the problem. This is what I talk about. I talk about just changing ownership for the Trailblazers doesn't immediately change anything. Because I hear what's going on behind the scenes with the Blazers, and I've heard what's going on behind the scenes with the Commanders under Dan Snyder. They're two different worlds.
Yeah.
It's like when it's that level of bad, yeah, it's ownership, baby. Through and through. Yep. You can go, no. It's ownership.
Direct
unquestionably.
Line of causation.
There's a causation correlation. Yeah. 100%.
All right.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And that dude's watch. I mean, not only is he losing on the field, he's losing off the field. They got the authorization from the new stadium that he can never get done. That's going to have a built-in casino. They're going to get the money for it. It's like every bag, they're going to rebrand the franchise with a name that doesn't suck.
Yeah,
like everything is coming up good for them ever since he left.
Hmm. Something tells me like he's into high lie now, or like he just doesn't. He's just like gotten away from all American sports because it would somehow come back to the Commanders. And this is again, they need to change the name from the Commanders because that's the last stink that he has on that team.
Red Tails, baby.
They're going to have a new stadium. Mm-hmm. They have their
break it in with a new name.
Just start anew with everything.
Love
get
it.
Him completely out of it.
Mm. It's a wonderful thing to see.
God.
Speaking of starting anew with everything.
Mm.
We're going to football very hard today, but the basketball's working its way into
oh
this
my gosh.
Because Scoot Henderson has
it
had
should.
His best week ever.
Ever.
Ever. We'll dive into that more can be here to close up today's show on Danny and Dusty today the Fan. Portland Trailblazers go 1-4. On their five-game homestand with their one win coming against the Chicago Bulls. And boy, do they suck something fierce.
That team's bad, dude.
Boy, they are bad.
Who saw that coming the second of the back-to-back?
Goodness gracious. That's a bad basketball team, man. They did go down and get a win against the Clippers yesterday, I think it was.
Yeah, basketball doesn't make sense.
But regardless, Scoot Henderson has put together the best stretch of basketball in his career. And it's not particularly close. After a game against Brooklyn, on January 14th, where he goes for 39 points, a career high, in a game that the Nets beat the living crap out of the Blazers.
Mm-hmm.
They end up losing by 18. He follows it up with a 16-6 performance against the Clippers, in which the Blazers get the ever-living crap beat out of them. They lose by 29. He follows that up, though, with 21-11 against the Houston Rockets, in which the Blazers get the ever-living crap kicked out of them
mm-hmm.
by 22. But the game to me that's now standing out is the game that he had against those lowly Bulls, where he has 25-8.
And I think that Clippers game, I watched it, and as I was watching it, I was like, yeah, he's scoring, but it's at kind of the detriment of the flow of the game. And I think over the last week, but scoring is just ball going through hoop we haven't seen from
him. No, it's a massive improvement. Because, I mean, before this game, against Miami, he played 21 minutes. He was 1-for-6 with 3 points and 3 assists. I mean, it was very bad.
But I think that when I was watching the Bulls game, it seemed different in that it wasn't a hero ball as much.
It was in the flow.
It was in the flow, and mm-hmm. it played in within the context of, hey, this looks like it's maybe a little bit more structured than I'm just going to run and chuck.
He had a plan, and that was the thing that stood out. I'm in the process of gathering data to do Scoot's first 100 games. I think he's at 97 now. And when I say that statistically, he's profiled as one of the worst players in the modern era. I mean, he's right there with like Sebastian Telfair, DeJuan Wagner, Teo Maledon, Emmanuel Mudiay.
And I think like Sebastian Telfair is, it's almost like, yeah, I see a lot of that in that it was free flowing, if you want to be nice about it, or ISO hero ball, watch me operate, if you want to be honest about how the style of play. Like that's what it has looked like to this point, in that, you know, we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the Mike Richmond article, what he told Mike Richmond. It was like, I don't like structure.
I want to play in the open play. I want to play in, you know, with freedom. And it's like, yeah, but that's not where the NBA is played. 90% of the game is played in the half court.
Successful basketball is played at any level.
And the crazy thing about this isn't just the ball going in the hoop, because that can happen for anyone. I saw Corey Brewer score 50. Like, it happens.
Hells yeah.
But what really stood out for me against the Bulls was, for maybe the first time in his career, he had a plan.
That,
and you could see it. Like, you don't get to runners and floaters without having a plan. That's not just a shot you go, and throw up. Like, there was real thought processes taking place. And that is, you didn't see this coming. It hasn't been like a slow burn to this. Like, with Shaden, you saw it coming. With Tumani, you saw it coming. Hell, when Ant was developing, you saw it coming.
Mm-hmm.
This literally came out of nowhere. And it's been, again, it will be one of the biggest statistical turnarounds ever for a guy through his first 100 games who has performed this poorly. For him to do this, if this is actually what he is, which I still don't believe.
No, we're going to have to see a lot more.
But he's going to have the opportunity to show it.
We're seeing a little bit of a corner turn. We'll see how many times we see this, like, you think that a young player's turning a corner, and then they say, instead of going left, I'm going to turn this thing right, and we're going to go directly into the wall, right? We've seen that a lot. But I also think, I don't know how much this plays into it, but how much of it had to do with, you know, Shaden Sharpe moving to the bench, which that was something that there was some comments that I was reading of you guys in the post game, just going, oh.
I mean, pre-game, it was the closest Chauncey Billups has come to his year one fire and brimstone. I mean, it was about as close as I've seen Chauncey throw a player into a wood chipper in since year one.
Well, yeah.
It was pretty bad.
When I read that, the pregame interview piece where you said, or it was just your tweet where you said, it's in Shaden's hands now.
Yeah, it was basically like, it's not up to me, man. He's not, played himself out of the starting line.
He's not playing defense. Yeah. If he wants to get back in, it's in his hands. And then here, like reading what Hyken put out there after the game of, you know, Shaden kind of contrasting comments there where he's like, yeah, it was a really good combo. He told me what I needed to do, and today I think I took a big step in doing what he said I needed to do.
I mean, Shaden owned it, so. But let's see where it goes.
But I wonder how much that has to do with, you know, guys on the floor and that combination of him feeling comfortable with certain players.
You inserted more guys that maybe have more of a plan.
Look, we said this Friday. I don't know how much basketball we're going to be getting, dude.
But we found some.
I think it's worthwhile, too, and we'll see after today. I'm not going to say that tonight, because Jeff Restaurant might get mad. This evening? This evening's game?
Late afternoon.
It's a 4:30 tip, so I'd call it afternoon.
Okay, this afternoon, into the evening's tip against the Miami Heat. Maybe we'll have more to talk about tomorrow on Scoot and his development. All right, up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. It's primetime with Isaac and Souk. Have a great Tuesday, everybody. See you Wednesday, noon to 3, right here on The Fan.
Bye.